Bad news.
Bad news for the state.
Bad news for capital.
Bad news for patriarchy.
Bad news for all forms of domination.
Bad news. Angry voices from around the world.
Our monthly info show from anarchist and anti-authoritarian radio projects worldwide.
If these news are bad, I don't want to be good.
Welcome to the monthly show of the International Anti-Authoritarian and Anarchist Radio Network. This is the 23rd episode of Bad News, Angry Voices from Around the World, for June 2019, mixed by Radio Zones of Subversive Expression.
These are the angry voices of Dissident Island Radio
from London.
Back in the UK!
Listening to the UK segment of Bad News, the UK being the so-called Kingdom of Not-So-United Britain. This is brought to you by Dissident Island Radio, a radical DIY radio collective pumping out twice monthly shows from London, the capital of capital. Workers organizing with the United Voices of the World Union have been busy in London, fighting back against outsourcing and poverty pay, from Chanel to the Hilton Hotel to the Trocadero and University of Greenwich. June started off with cleaners at Chanel winning the London Living Wage, after Carmen, one of the lead organizers for her Latin American colleagues, was suspended by the outsourcing company on preposterous charges in a transparent attempt to shut down the dispute. Chanel offered an initial pay rise of 10% to £9.10 pence an hour, following the continued threat of a strike. Recognizing this was still well below the London Living Wage of £10.55 pence an hour, cleaners continued to fight and moved to ballot for strike action, organizing a mass protest at Chanel's store on New Bond Street. Consequently, Chanel have now confirmed they will pay the full London Living Wage to cleaners across their stores. As the victory at Chanel meant the mass picket was called off, UVW organized further actions against other workplaces in the West End. They marched to the Hilton Doubletree's Hotel at Marble Arch, where a member is owed hundreds of pounds after being paid illegally at well below minimum wage. Members danced in the foyer and demanded to see both the hotel manager and the manager of the contract cleaning firm. Police came and tried to get the union and management to talk. Cleaners who work at the famous entertainment venue Trocadero and the Criterion Building in Piccadilly Circus that overlooks the Trocadero and where annual rent costs £11 million per year have decided enough is enough and are set to down tools and strike until they are paid the London Living Wage. Outsourced to dock cleaning, they are currently paid poverty wages, which at a whopping £2.24 pence an hour under the current London Living Wage. Cleaners are also demanding an occupational sick pay scheme to ensure that they are still paid when they take a sick day. The cleaners have also previously received threats and suffered cuts to their hours in response to having asked for contracts of employment. These buildings are owned by Criterion Capital that owns and manages a modest 2 billion property portfolio across London and the southeast of England. UVW members working as security guards at St George's University, a medical school in Tooting, South London, and Constituent College of the University of London have voted in an indicative ballot to strike until St George's terminates its contract with contractor Noonan and brings them in-house. UVW will now move to ballot them. Bringing the workers in-house would end the two-tier workforce the security have been subjected to for years, which has seen them severely overworked, disrespected, and under-recognized. In addition, their terms and conditions remain on the pernicious statutory minimums, whilst university staff enjoy generous holiday allowances, pensions, and sick pay schemes. With a £3.1 million increase in St. George's annual income last year, a surplus increase to £3.5 million, any costs involved with in-housing their security guards can easily be absorbed. The two-tier workforces created by outsourcing have been successfully challenged, beginning with UVW's historic victory at the London School of Economics in 2017, which saw the termination of a £5 million a year contract with Nonan, bringing some 250 cleaners in-house after the then-largest cleaner strike in British history. Since then, tertiary educational institutions of SOAS, King's, Birkbeck, and Goldsmiths, with the exception of security, have all followed suit, with Senate House and UCL expected to follow next. Cafe workers at Greenwich University, outsourced Baxter Story, have joined UVW en masse and voted to strike for the London Living Wage to lift them off the poverty pay they currently receive. So check out libcom.org and the United Voices of the World website for more details on strike actions, past, present, and future. And also check out the Dissident Island Radio Show, episode 212, where we chat to the United Voices of the World about organizing with precarious workers. On Thursday, 30th of May, workers at MGT Power Plant in Teesside began a spontaneous protest. The workers had gone on strike at the Tees Renewable Energy Plant, the world's largest biomass power plant being built on Teesside by MGT, over poor safety conditions. The action was sparked by what was described as a boiler incident. The plant's operator has confirmed an incident involving a boiler where a suspended load moved during installation. Nobody was injured in the incident, and soon the area was declared safe by the plant operator. However, workers refused to return to work, with their spokesperson saying that they felt unsafe. The protests caused delays on major motorways and surrounding roads as workers blocked the Tees Dock Road near the plant. The police mounted an operation in response to the protests to clear the road with large numbers of cops and a helicopter present. Check out libcom.org and Freedom News for more details and links. In May, in the lead up to the European Parliament elections, various fascist politicians were milkshaked while campaigning across cities in the UK. Stephen Yaxley Lennon, whose pretend name you might be familiar with is Tommy Robinson, was the first major figure to be milkshaked, having one thrown as a projectile in Bury on the 1st of May and another thrown the following day in Warrington. Carl Benjamin, a UKIP candidate and also an alt-right mouthpiece, had four milkshakes, some horseshit, and a handful of kippers thrown at him while campaigning in Sainsbury's, Truro and Totnes. The kippers, by the way, is a reference to the fact that he's a candidate for the racist UKIP party. Get it? Nudge nudge wink wink. As a bonus, alt-right former poster boy Milo Yiannopoulos was also milkshaked, but this gained very little media attention given his overall irrelevance in today's day. The crowning glory of milkshaking this past month, however, went to Nigel Farage, the renowned fascist politician and former UKIP leader, was hit in the face by a banana and salted caramel milkshake. This happened on the 20th of May while he was campaigning in Newcastle upon Tyne. Paul Crowther was arrested for the action. He was fired from his job at Sky, the television broadcast network, and has been sentenced to 150 hours of unpaid work, £300 in fines, an £85 victim charge, and £85 in court costs. The milkshake actions had a significant effect on the campaign activities, with Nigel Farage being trapped on his campaign bus, not being able to mingle with the crowd for fear of further milkshaking embarrassments, and Carl Benjamin reining in his campaign activities very significantly. There are some great opinion pieces out there, like in organizemagazine.org.uk, on the politics of milkshaking as an effective form of anti-fascist action. Have a read there for more information and links. And last but not least, June 18th marked the 20-year anniversary of the Carnival Against Capital, which happened 20 years ago on June 18th, 1999. It is considered one of the high points of the anti-slash-alter-globalization movement, along with the WTO protests that happened in Seattle, USA, also in 1999. 20 years on, various radical media outlets have posted links to media and reflections on the protests, which are as relevant today as ever. If you're interested in learning more about this piece of history, check out the article Reflections on June 18, 1999 from libcom.org. And that's it for this month's UK segment of Bad News. I've been Chickpea, from Dissident Island Radio, a radical radio show based in the capital of capital, that's London, in the greater, so-called kingdom of a not really united Britain. And why not check out our fantastic radio shows featuring interviews on radical campaigns, direct action, political discussions, legal information and updates, as well as loads of awesome music. Go to dissidentisland.org or find us on the usual social media sites by searching for Dissident Island, and that's spelled DissidentIsland. And thank you for listening.
Because resistance is fertile.
Final Straw, thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org, a weekly anarchist and anti-authoritarian radio show broadcasting out of occupied Cherokee land in southern Appalachia. We bring you voices and perspectives from projects and struggles all around the world.
On this month's edition of Bad News, Angry Voices from Around the World, The Final Straw is sharing a conversation with activists from Stark and Mark. They're both left legal defense groups from vastly geographically distant areas in the so-called U.S. They talk about the case of repression in the so-called upstate, or northern part of the state of South Carolina in the southeastern U.S., where anti-racist and anti-fascist activists have been surveilled, intimidated, harassed, detained while naked at home, and arrested by local and federal law enforcement, including the FBI, apparently on behalf of and in collusion with local white supremacists. You can learn more about and keep up on the situation, including how to donate to legal costs, at norepressionsc.home.blog.
I'm part of Scuffletown Anti-Repression Committee, also known as STARC.
And I'm Steven. I'm a member of the Michigan Anti-Repression Committee.
Would y'all give listeners some description of the upstate area and the activists being targeted?
We're talking about pretty rural western South Carolina, small community.
On top of cultural and geographic isolation, a few of the people who are being investigated have marginalized identities that makes them further vulnerable. Two folks in this case are queer single moms, and another person is both trans and disabled.
In the fall of 2018, a local known white supremacist went to someone's place of employment, demanding their personal information, and also making comments that alluded to an investigation that was currently going on. So sometime in the fall, between that visit by white supremacists and December 27, 2018, that person's car was searched by local police, which is Greenville County Sheriff's Office, as well as the Joint Terrorism Task Force of the FBI. And something that's going to come up that was a little confusing for me to understand at first, there's actually an agent who works both as a sheriff and an agent of the FBI. So it's not just interdepartmental working. Like, there's actually somebody who works in both departments. On December 27, 2018, the first home was raided by local police and the FBI. This person was not arrested. However, they answered the door naked at the time, and they were handcuffed naked while many agents searched their home. The feds did try to talk to this individual while their home was being searched, and this is the first time that a federal agent references her personal relationship to the complaining witnesses who are two known white supremacists in this part of South Carolina. She made a comment about being friends with these people. And she'll later refer to that at the second time a home is searched. So while this person wasn't arrested, she was left handcuffed and naked, at one point covered by a sheet with a bunch of strangers in her home. And she was not permitted to see the search warrant until they left. And then she found that the search warrant mentioned conspiracy to violate civil rights. Okay, so then we go to 2019 in January. Three individuals received notices from Facebook that access to their accounts were granted to the police. In March 2019, FBI and local police confronted another person at work and tried to persuade them to answer questions. In April 2019, two more people received notice from Facebook that their accounts were granted to the police. And then on April 24th, 2019, someone's home was raided. And this is the one person who has been arrested so far. Her house was raided by both FBI and the local police, and she was charged with felony first-degree harassment. Both the questioning that this person got from the feds, as well as what sort of stuff was listed in the search warrant, points to these folks specifically being targeted through state repression for identifying or maybe like engaging as anti-fascist and anti-racist.
So the complaining witnesses in the case are known Nazis and friends of the Klan. They publicly identify as such.
One question that I have is about three white men were parked outside of the house of the person who was arrested upon their arrival home out of jail. We don't know their identities or how they might have known to go to that person's house.
With the current state ramping up white supremacy and repression of racialized populations and anti-racist activists, including white folks, do y'all see the situations in South Carolina and the J20 case as a part of a federal trend?
This is really an excellent question, in part just because it gets at the idea that there might be some sort of a national trend. At least now we're seeing FBI involvement in terms of investigating anti-fascists in several different places. The cases all look kind of different, but there are some broad similarities, right? There is a similarity in terms of the use of social media and sort of the broad net that the FBI appears to be casting in the ways that they are trying to use social media to map both larger movements and then also to sort of look at specific charges.
A difficult part of this case is an allegation of animal cruelty made by the complaining witnesses. In their affidavit, they allege that someone put dead animals in their yard. And while I'm personally not inclined to believe Nazis or the state, that is a difficult thing that's in there. And I just think that's a good like learning moment that sometimes people will be accused of really horrific things. I do think the success or failure of this case on the government's part will determine how they move forward with other anti-fascist, anti-racist, anarchists, folks in the United States. And I've been thinking about how white people like myself who have community with like-minded people, like how can we share our resources or support or show solidarity to folks who live in more remote areas or don't have as wide of a community?
In terms of support, folks can visit the No Repression SC website. It's norepressionsc.home.blog. That contains the statement and then whatever current information there is about the ongoing cases and the current case. And then also there is a GoFundMe set up, and that's linked on the statement on the website that I just mentioned. Folks should feel free to donate there for legal costs.
To learn more about the work that Stark and Mark do, the two groups that provided the legal support for this interview, you can check out Scuffletown Anti-Repression Committee at scuffletownarc.wordpress.com, as well as on various social media platforms. And you can also find the Michigan Anti-Repression Committee up at miantirepression.org.
Pasión por la libertad es más fuerte que cualquier celda.
June's Angry Voices from Greece by Radio Zones of Subversive Expression.
The three arrested for armed robbery at the University Hospital Achepa on 12th of June, Sakas, Dimitrakis, Syrianou, sent their messages from the police department where they are held. On the 18th of June, Sakas and Dimitrakis were imprisoned and Syrianou were freed under conditions. Police authorities are searching their belongings, telephone communication and the guns they used in their attempt to expropriate money mission. We stay strong, with dignity, the three announced in Athens and the media, and called for solidarity against state and capitalism terrorism.
Solidarity actions are being organized in Greece for the hunger strikers in Italian prisons from 29th of May for their fight against special isolation regime and guaranteed practices by the Article 41B.
Prisoner Yanis Mikhailidis escaped from the rural prison he was held. He and four comrades were sentenced to 23 years and 9 months in prison after the charge of two armed robberies in Velvedo. He was also arrested twice back in 2011 and 2007 and 2006 and let free with no charges. Police authorities are now examining the conditions of his break and chasing him.
After the participation in the big delivery strike on April 11th, workers were fired by their bosses because of their participation in the strike. In solidarity with their fired workers, actions are being organized all over Greece, demanding justice for their eventual dismissal.